This is a podcast from Consilio. We bring people together to create better places.
Hello and welcome to Better Places. In a break from our usual format, we go straight to our Labour Party conference special, where Consilio's Luke Francis and Oscar Harmon interview Westminster City Councillors Ellie Ormsby and James Small-Edwards about their experiences in Liverpool, Labour's focus on housing and the first 18 months of Westminster's Labour administration.
Hello and welcome to Better Places, the podcast from Consilio, where we discuss property, planning and politics from across London and beyond. We've got some special guests with us today, but I'll start by introducing my co-host, Oscar Harmon. Oscar, say hello.
Hello, good morning.
Didn't ask you to say good morning, just hello, but that's fine. And we are joined today for a very special post-Labour Party conference podcast by two of the rising stars from Westminster. We're joined by James Small-Edwards and Ellie Ormsby. Guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Are you recovered from your time in Liverpool?
Just about, I think.
Yeah, excellent.
Well, pending.
The jury's out still. Guys, well, let's kick off. We'll start by just sort of introducing you guys properly. Ellie, we'll kick off with you. Just tell us a bit about your role. You've been a councillor for 18 months?
Yeah, so I was elected last year in May 22, and I am the ward councillor for Lancaster Gate in the city of Westminster. And I was the first Labour councillor elected there alongside my ward colleague Ryan ever. And I am also the deputy cabinet member for housing improvement and procurement.
Wow, fantastic. And James?
Yes, I'm James Small-Edwards. I represent the neighbouring ward, Bayswater. We had one Labour councillor there previously, though we then took the other two seats from the Conservatives in the elections last year. And I am the Deputy Cabinet Member for Planning and Economic Development. So delighted to be on Consilio's podcast.
Fantastic. No, we're delighted to have you guys on. Well, look, we are all recovering at varying degrees. Some of us decided to leave earlier than others from Labour Party conference. But it's been a very busy couple of days. We've had lots of announcements, lots of very, very exciting news coming out of Liverpool. Give us your experiences of it. You're obviously both seasoned conference goers. So how did you find it?
Yeah, I think for me, I've been a member of the Labour Party for over 10 years, and I've been to, I think, about six conferences over the years. So I've definitely seen conference in varying states throughout those years, shall we say. And I think this year, to be honest, it was buzzing. It's the busiest I've ever seen it. I think both in terms of attendees and external organisations wanting to be there and, yeah, and talk to Labour. I think The Guardian actually reported it was the biggest conference Labour's ever had, even in comparison to some of the conferences in the 1990s. Wow. So it's pretty incredible.
I suppose, well.
Yeah, and I've been to the last few alongside Ellie, actually, and we've kind of seen, I think, the change, even from 2021. I think in 2021, there were a lot of kind of internal battles that were won, which are very important, which I think are one of the reasons why we're in the position we are today. Last year, we obviously had, it came just after Liz Truss's mini-budget, and so there was a prospect that, you know, we really do have an opportunity at power. And this year, I felt it was kind of quite sober, quite reflective, I think a real responsibility of what could be to come ahead. You know, we're not taking anything for granted, but certainly this is the best chance Labour have in a long time of getting back into power. And there was a real seriousness to the policy discussions I found, a real understanding that, you know, what Labour shadow ministers would be saying affects investment decisions now, affects business. And yeah, that focus was really good to see.
So did you feel like there was confidence rather than complacency from the leadership at conference?
Yeah, and I think that very much comes from the top down. You know, from what I hear, Keir is always reminding the shadow cabinet that nothing's taken for granted. You know, can I never underestimate the Conservatives? You know, 1992 plays big in that. So no, yeah, I think there's absolutely no complacency from the Labour Party. You know, business engagement was the highest it's been. There's obviously an expectation that Labour will be certainly competitive at the next general election, but you know, over the past 13 years, what we've seen, you certainly can't underestimate the Conservatives. So there's no one in the Labour Party taking anything for granted, I don't think.
We're very good at losing elections in the Labour Party.
Absolutely. I think we're under no illusions that the Tories will fight just as hard as Labour will in the next election. So it won't be an easy ride. It's not a coronation.
Keir said, you know, something along the lines of, you know, any line you think the Tories won't cross, they've got plans to cross it. And that's, you know, I absolutely believe it. Oscar, we'll start with you because I know you ran around conference like a headless chicken to any and every event and fringe. Highlight?
I think one of the things that really stood out to me, and we went to, myself and colleagues from Consilio, went to several events that predominantly focused on property, planning, infrastructure and various associated issues. And as Ellie said, what struck me was the level of interest from business and external organisations. One of the key things that came away to me and shone through was the kind of theme throughout all of these events was that everyone you spoke to, the key thing they're looking for is stability, certainty, and particularly in local government and the issue of planning, the resources to be able to adequately deliver for their local residents. I think that was definitely the thing that shone through for me than the events that I was at.
It was, I think you ended up going to about 15, 20 different events, didn't you? A lot of them with the same panellists. I feel like it was just you and them walking from event to event.
Absolutely.
Hearing the same things. But it was, so we hosted our Back the Builders rally that was very well attended and very well received. But there was a, you know, clearly Keir and the leadership got the message. It was a very sort of, you know, pro-YIMBY response. How did you guys find that? Did it feel like a very YIMBY conference for you?
Well, I was going to ask you whether you wrote Keir's speech, to be honest. I mean,
that cost me a lot of money to get
I mean, everything I heard at the Concilio event the day before was then pretty much repeated by Rachel Reeves and then by Keir. So, you know, I think as Deputy Cabinet Member for Planning, obviously I have an interest in these matters as well. And, yeah, to see Keir and Rachel come out so proudly in YIMBY is something that I think is fantastic to see. You know, new towns, 1.5 million new homes over the course of the Parliament. You know, who couldn't be excited by that? And I think, particularly with me and Elion, as younger councillors in our 20s, you know, all our friends living in London, central London, spending 40, 50% plus of their wages on rent. You know, we have a real housing crisis. And, yeah, it's fantastic to see the Labour Party back the bills. I think it'll be good for our economy. I think it'll be good for younger people. I think it'll be good across the board. So it's very, very positive development.
I think we have to be honest. I think this is a dramatic shift because it has been ignored, I think, by successive governments, not just the Conservative Party, but also about Labour, the housing crisis. And ultimately, you know, the housing crisis is one of supply and we can't get around that. So we will have to potentially do some of the radical action and maybe even unpopular decisions to build new developments in places where existing residents don't want them, but I think that's the route that we have to take.
And I think it also provides us with a real opportunity to really state that claim of, you know, Labour is now the party of home ownership. Mm. I don't think the Conservatives can claim that anymore. And I think that provides, you know, not just, I think it's the right thing to do from an ideological point of view, but politically that provides an opportunity for Labour as well. If we can get a whole generation of people into more secure tenancies or secured ownership models, then that's a fantastic opportunity for the Labour Party.
Does it also give you guys a sort of the coal face of politics? You know, local government, local authorities are the ones who deliver the vast majority of the services and the decision making that impacts people's lives. Having that message from, you know, hopefully the next government, does it provide you with the political cover as well to make those difficult decisions? Because we've seen with the scrapping of housing targets, you know, aside from whatever that says about aspiration and planning for, you know, the economic and social need of communities, it also gave local authorities a bit of comfort to be able to say, well, if we don't deliver these homes, someone, you know, a faceless civil servant from Whitehall is going to be the one to deliver that. Is there a sense that councils will be able to take these decisions with more comfort and more certainty, knowing that they're backed by a government that wants to see this delivered?
Well, I think leadership is hugely important on these issues. And like you say, it's a steer of where things are going. And I think that's where national government is so important in terms of that steer. And if their steer is a NIMBY steer, if their steer is, you know, we don't really care about our own housing targets, then people are going to react accordingly. It's going to embolden people who don't want to see development, who don't want to see the homes that, you know, the next generation can move into and build a life on. So I think it's hugely important. And the fact that in all the interviews since the speech, you know, it'd be easy to kind of fudge a line and take a kind of middle ground position on these issues. But, you know, Keir's come out and been proudly, you know, YIMBY.
It's been bullish with it, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So I think that's fantastic to see. And yeah, it does embolden those of us in local government who want to see more housing built, who want to see people get more secure lives and be able to progress. Because I think it's very difficult. If you've got an insecure housing situation, you've got an insecure life. Mm-hmm. You can't build that family life. You can't, you know, think about potentially having children. You can't think about those things because you don't know whether you're going to be in the same property in the next month. And that's kind of no position for stability. So, yeah, I think it's hugely positive development. I think it's hugely important, the tone that national government sets. I think it's a much better tone than the one that this government is setting. Mm.
And I think as well, just situating it in our kind of Westminster context, I say Westminster is in the council as opposed to national government. I think, you know, you mentioned about being on the coalface. As a ward councillor, I'm seeing a dramatic uptick in residents coming to me saying they've been given Section 21 notices by their landlords in the private rental sector, and therefore they have 2 months to leave their properties.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, the cost of rent, as we know in London, is insane. If you're on housing benefits, only 3% of property in London is actually affordable to you. So you are going to struggle to try and find alternative accommodation within those 2 months, and therefore people are coming to the council and presenting as homeless. And, you know, the council has finite resources as well. We've got thousands of people in temporary accommodation, people on our social housing waiting list. So I do worry about how local authorities are going to have to cope in the interim until, you know, we do see this change in narrative of a new government.
How does this go down with, I was going to say voters, but let's say residents in Westminster? How do you think the message coming out from Keir and the leadership around, you know, getting Britain building, delivering those homes, does it divide opinion somewhere like Westminster?
I think it's not a policy in many ways that is focused on a Westminster, because, you know, a lot of it is like car parks in what is currently the Greenbelt, but, you know, what land that should be developed on. So, and the new towns obviously, you know, aren't going to be in Hyde Park, thankfully. So so
he's not said where those new towns are coming. Yeah. So, I mean,
very well connected, you know.
So, I mean, politically, I don't think that would be the most popular thing if that was the case. I can definitely say that. So, yeah, I think in the specific Westminster context, you know, it's great for that steer, mm-hmm. But I think the specifics of it aren't necessarily applicable right in the centre of London.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there is a constituency of people who don't want to see development in, you know, not in my backyard. You know, mm-hmm. it's a quite an accurate statement. But I think the fact that Keir has placed himself firmly on one side of the argument, firmly on the side of those striving for secure housing against those who maybe already have it and don't want to see other people get it, I think is right. You know, I think it's fundamentally a Labour issue, a social democratic issue of people getting opportunity. Like I said before, I don't think you can have stability in your life unless you have stable housing. And so I think this is very much an issue we should own.
And building on both what you said, James, and what Ellie you said previously, we are very grateful to have you at our event on Sunday. One of the speakers and one of the MPs who's becoming very much the spearhead of this mm-hmm. movement is Andrew Weston, who was mm-hmm. elected relatively recently. And as part of our relationship with Homes for Britain, we spoke at an event with Andrew this summer, in which he said that he's not a housing guy, he's an equalities guy.
Mm.
And that for him, the issue around housing, which you've touched on, both of you in the comments just now, housing is very much, as you said, the means to achieve both greater equality. So Ellie, if I come to you in relation to your new brief on Westminster City Council, how much do you think housing plays an issue in building that and reducing the inequality as part of the fairer economy strategy that Westminster and you as Westminster Labour are very keen to drive forward over the next 3 years?
No, absolutely. I think the link between, I think as James alluded to, stable housing and having somewhere to call your home and equality is indivisible, or indivisible, I should say. You know, if you are a young person, I believe, may misquote me, I think 1 in 23 children in London live in temporary accommodation. If you're one of those children, how can you go to school or, you know, do work at home if you're in crowded temporary accommodation, things like that? You've not got the fair start in life which other children in London do have. So I think the link there between having a stable, safe, you know, big enough home for you to comfortably live in with your family is one of the key kind of building blocks of building a fairer economy and society in London and across Westminster.
Yeah, and I see the thing in the same way as Andrew does. I think it's fundamentally an equalities issue. You know, if someone was out saying, you know, I don't believe in free healthcare or universal education, people would turn around and say, rightly, you know, that's pretty ridiculous views to hold. And you know, those aren't views that many people would articulate. But on housing, for some reason, it seems okay to be able to say, I don't want to see, you know, younger people, poorer people get housing. And I think that fundamentally has to change. So I think the comms around it probably has to be a bit different. I think NIMBY makes it sound like quite funny. It always sounds like a party kind of thing. Whereas actually, you know, I think it's fundamentally opposed to equity and equality in our society. And yeah, that's why I think we need to fight it. And that's why I'm very happy we are fighting it.
So sort of looking ahead for you guys, you're, you know, 18 months into the role, and, you know, the next sort of big political moments are going to be, we've got a mayoral election mm-hmm. next May, and then a general election, TBC, but probably autumn next year. What are the biggest sort of opportunities and challenges for you guys from a sort of Westminster Council perspective?
Yeah, I think there's been a fantastic amount of opportunities over the last 18 months. You know, Westminster is such a unique council, I think, in many ways, from a financial standpoint, from its centrality, not just to London's economy, but to the UK economy as a whole. And I was born in Westminster. I've lived my entire life in Westminster. So it's been a, you know, the privilege of my life, really, being elected to the council. And with that size of the council, with its centrality, with its importance, there do come some challenges. We have some fantastic, fantastic staff at Westminster, which we're very lucky to have. But it's also a very big bureaucracy as a result of, you know, the many functions we perform. And certainly one of the things that took me a little bit of time to understand was how to get things done. You know, that whole idea of pulling a lever and you feel like not too much happens. And it's understanding how you can get things done within a big bureaucracy, which you can. But I think it does take a bit of time to be able to do. And I think, yeah, it took certainly a few months for me to understand how it worked. And I think it was added to the fact that we obviously took over the council for the first time ever last year. So it was, there was all kind of change. And whereas there might have been more scope for mentoring and stuff like that the time before when we weren't in power, you know, all the kind of councillors who've been there 10 years, 20 years, in Paul's case, 40 years,
yeah,
you know, they were learning something new as well because they were taking over these briefs, which, you know, they shadowed for a long time, but hadn't run themselves. And yeah, so I think there are a fantastic amount of opportunities being a councillor in Westminster, but challenge
and I think as well, like, we've definitely taken advantage of those opportunities. I think our Labour administration in the last 18 months has done a lot we can be proud of, even if we have been trying to get to grips with new roles. You know, we've, you know, introduced free school meals, we've got to grips with the Oxford Street programme, we've launched our charter against dirty money, we've become a fair tax council, we've frozen council tax, we've launched a school uniform fund, we've launched a climate assembly. Like, we've been busy, so we've taken advantage of a lot of the opportunities. Yeah, the levers have been pulled and we're still going.
What's it like, this might be a difficult question because you can't compare it to anything, but the age profile, I noticed it at our event at conference. There were a lot of young councillors there, a lot of councillors in their 20s and 30s. And my experience, even, you know, working for probably 15 years ago, there weren't that many young councillors. There wasn't that representation. You know, being in your sort of 40s meant you were probably on the younger end of a Labour group. Now we've got a load of young councillors, a lot of first-time councillors as well. What's that experience like? Is there any difficulties that come with it, or do you think there are advantages to sort of representing a generation that previously haven't had a huge amount of representation at local government?
And just to jump in there on the kind of increase in younger councillors, because I think you're right, especially in London, there are a fair few younger councillors, but I don't think that's representative necessarily of councillors across England. Only 16% of councillors in the country are under 45.
Wow.
So, you know, I don't know. I dread to think how many are under 30, like James and I. So I think, yeah, it's probably having that caveat up front that I think there's still quite a long way to go to get young people's represented in politics.
Yeah, I think the average age of a councillor in England is 60. So, you know, we've made a lot of progress in Westminster, I will say. I think our Labour group is much more representative of the area we're fortunate enough to represent than previous iterations of leadership in Westminster Council have been. But, you know, there are undoubtedly challenges. And I remember when I first got selected to be the candidate for Bayswater, I kind of did think, oh, you know, how are voters kind of going to perceive me on the doorstep? Is this going to come up a lot? And thankfully, actually, with voters, it rarely did. I can think of one instance where there was a negative-ish comment made about my age. But other than that, it was very positive. It was very much like, oh, this, you know, it's fantastic to see you out on the doorstep. It's great to see a young face, someone who, you know, lives in the area, grown up in the area. You know, good on you. And we need to see a bit of change. We need to shake things up. And, you know, obviously that was replicated at the election with a 17.5% swing to Labour in Bayswater. So people were very welcoming on the doorstep. In terms of once then getting elected, there certainly, I mean, there are challenges. That's undoubted. I think in many ways, not through any fault of Westminster in particular or any particular local authority, but just the structure of local authorities means that it is very conducive to people who are retired. And it's not very conducive to people who work full time like Ellie and I. You know, council staff work kind of the core hours, but we're also working those core hours. So the work we do on the council often has to be in the evenings, on the weekends, and it makes it difficult sometimes to have meetings with officers because we're working at the same time as they're working. So I do think there is a long way to go in setting up the structures better. But certainly in Westminster, I think we've done a lot. I think we've got sort of 6 or 7 councillors in their 20s.
Amazing.
Which is, you know, a massive increase on what we had before. You know, you see with Councillor Hamza Tazal being our first choice for Lord Mayor since we took over, that there is that feeling of giving young people, you know, responsibility. Not just you can be on the council and be a backbencher, but you can have a deputy cabinet role. In Ellie's case, you can be chief whip. In Hamza's case, you can be Lord Mayor. So it's not just getting us onto the council, it's giving us that responsibility. And, you know, all praise has to go to Adam Hugg and the rest of the leadership team for placing that responsibility on us.
Are there lessons that maybe the Labour Party could learn nationally from what's worked in Westminster to get such a young group as well, and to be able to attract people, you know, at an earlier age from different backgrounds to get involved in politics? Because I, you know, I know from my experience working in the Labour Party in sort of the mid to late, like thousands, 2000s, it was predominantly retired councillors. Those were the people who sort of in their 60s ran for election and got elected and would then do 15, 20 years and then retire. Is there something that the Labour Party can learn that you're getting right in Westminster to roll out across the country?
To be fair, I think what we did really well, and we are starting to do it again now for the next election in 2026, is we spent a lot of time. We didn't just kind of wait until, you know, a few months before the election, let's do a mad rush to select candidates. We spent the kind of a, you know, few years prior kind of talking to people about, you know, this is the role of a councillor, this is what's expected of you, this is what you may expect. So we are starting our kind of so-called Victory Academy in the next couple of weeks.
I got an email about this last week.
Well, come on down.
I was like, do you want to be a young councillor? And I was like, I think you've got the cut-off date wrong.
So, for example, literally this evening, we're going to have potentially people who are interested in maybe becoming a councillor coming to kind of talk to us as existing councillors and cabinet members. I'm actually going to do a presentation on how we won in Lancaster Gate. So promises to be riveting. but yeah, so I think we've done a lot of outreach in the kind of long period between elections, and I think that's something lots of local Labour parties could learn from, I think.
Yeah, and kind of then comparing to nationally, I think there are some things in Westminster that make it more conducive to having young councillors, because obviously we're in the centre of London. London attracts a lot of young people who move here. You know, a lot of the councillors who represent us in Westminster weren't born here, you know, moved here in some cases relatively recently. And that's fantastic. You know, that's what our city has always been about. It's about people who come, people going, people who are staying. And obviously in other parts of the country, there isn't that same migration of young people to the area, so it's more difficult to get that representation, because a lot of young people might move at sort of 18, 21, 25 to either a big city nearby or to London. So I do think we do have some kind of inbuilt benefits, but I think we're now reaping the rewards of those opportunities, because, you know, previously that hadn't been the case. Westminster had been very, very unreflective of the area that it represents, and on many you know, indicators, sexual orientation, ethnicity, age, I think we're much better off where we are now than where we were previously.
Yeah.
And just to come in again on that point regarding representation of younger people in local government and indeed national government, we saw earlier this year the election of Keir Mather in Selby and Ainsley, 25 years old. Do you think that provides a fresh approach when it comes to the issue of planning and housing? I'm thinking more about the people that you spend your time with, your friends, your colleagues. They're disproportionately less likely to own their own home or even have a mortgage. Some of the statistics around, I think 1 in 3 children born today will own their own home by the time they're 50. So as that translates into local government and national government, elected officials representing younger people, do you think that's going to continue to push that drive toward more housing, more development, more spending in infrastructure, and more spending in time and resources to those things that are particularly pertinent for younger people who probably don't own their own home?
I think absolutely that is just going to have to be a truism, because I think the vast majority of my friendship group who are my kind of similar age in our mid to late 20s, we were all in the private rental sector, and I don't think we have any kind of near-term prospect of being able to buy our own home, especially not in London or central London in Westminster. Whereas if I think about my parents, my parents were on very, you know, ordinary salaries, but they managed to buy their own home in their early 20s, and they had that stability throughout their life and then subsequently my life. But I don't think I will get that in the kind of near future. And I think that's the same for a lot of young people. So I think, yeah, we will be bringing that very different perspective into politics. And I think that will mean a change in focus for housing.
Yeah, and we can kind of link this into what Keir said in his speech. I mean, Keir mentioned, you know, he grew up in a very working class family, but one thing he did have was stability of his own home, and that, you know, the pebble dash semi that he mentioned. But you know,
the Sadiq Khan's dad's a bus driver. Very much sort of. I'm going to keep saying this until it resonates.
But I think it does resonate, because there's a real serious point there, which is that, like I said earlier, if you don't have that stability in housing, it's very difficult to have a stable life. And I do think with local authorities being the planning authorities, if you do have an average council age of 60, with, you know, that demographic potentially being homeowners, mm-hmm. Potentially wealthier homeowners, the decisions that they'll make on planning committee will probably be different to decisions which someone who doesn't own their own home, is spending 55% of their post-tax income on rent in London, would make regarding a new development of housing, because they'll very much be in favour of it, because, you know, like I said, a lot of them have very unstable situations at the moment. So I think the age profile of councillors is hugely important from a planning and a housing perspective, because ultimately it's people, I'd say, you know, under 40, under 45, who are on the brunt of the housing crisis. And like Ellie said, for previous generations, there wasn't that same unaffordability of housing. You know, you could work for a few years and then have enough money for a deposit and a mortgage. You know, that's very much not the case in many parts of the country today, unfortunately.
Do you think this is going to be one of the defining, you know, we're 18 months into your term, so you'll probably start thinking about the next local elections now? Well, if you're giving me a presentation this evening to potential councillors, that's probably already on the radar. Is this going to be one of the sort of defining campaign areas, do you think, for Labour going into the next locals in 2026?
Well, I think housing was a big campaign issue for us in 2022 as well. Mm-hmm. You know, that commitment to increasing the amount of social housing, and we've made changes which has made that the case, you know, stopping the selling off, changing the balance of intermediate rent versus social rent. So I think it was a big issue in 2022, and I think, yeah, it will continue to be a big issue in 2026. Obviously, Ellie's been moved into the housing department. You know, that's putting someone, you know, one of our absolutely most capable councillors, into a housing role, and that's a very positive development and shows the kind of commitment we have to housing. In terms of 2026, obviously, you know, like Ellie said, we are always selecting candidates early, always trying to promote young people, promote talented people within Westminster, but there's a lot of delivery also to be done up until then. You know, we're still in 2023. We're still a way off the election. We spent nearly 60 years in opposition, and, you know, we finally got our hands on the levers of power, and we definitely want to use those levers in the time we have. And, you know, I think we've done a lot already, but there's a lot still to do, and our focus very much is still on delivery on the ground.
I think housing is a massive priority for our council leadership. They've been taking it incredibly seriously. Obviously, as we know, we inherited the council last year, and I think there was a housing department which maybe wasn't, obviously, as a council, you know, we are a landlord, we provide social housing at social rent, and I think that department maybe wasn't serving residents as well as it could have been. And I think that's one of our top priorities now, to review how we can make that better, have a housing service that actually listens to residents and their needs, and kind of helps them into more stable situations, so they're not kind of in temporary accommodation for long periods of time. And I think that's why I'm excited to take on my new brief in housing improvement, because that's exactly the area I'll be focusing in on, how we can make the kind of the council as a landlord a better landlord and look after the people living in our social housing.
And is there... how do you approach that? Is that something that you sort of reach out to other local authorities who are doing things well and sort of learning from other Labour administrations? How do you approach it?
Yeah, I think there's obviously a bit of benchmarking and looking at other councils. I think Westminster is similar to other London boroughs, but we are unique in some senses. I think we have some of the most expensive real estate and property in not even just in the UK, in the world. So I think we operate in a slightly different climate to say some other maybe like outer London authorities, where they may have more, you know, space to say build new housing themselves. We're quite restricted, obviously, as being in central London. So we are looking at other councils, and we always do. We work really closely with other councils across London to share best practice. But I think there are some problems which Westminster has to reflect on itself and kind of look at it in isolation.
And thinking ahead, so we've got the mayoral elections next year. It's going to be an interesting one, I mm-hmm. think. I think there'll be probably more of an inner and outer London divide than there's been for a long time, and it's always been there. But let's say Sadiq Khan wins a historic third term. What would be on your wish list from City Hall that would make your lives easier? How could you better things for the people of Westminster?
Well, eagle-eyed listeners might have seen that I have thrown my hat in the ring to be a Labour candidate for West Central on the London Assembly coming up.
Very exciting.
So, I will be kind of having quite a formal campaign for that, and kind of, I think, we'll be making most of my demands through more formal channels, I think.
I think, though, for myself, not as the... won't be doing the same as James there. So I think my kind of immediate thing I would like to ask Sadiq Khan is to commit to extending the free school meals offer to school children in London. You may know that Sadiq announced that all children in London state schools will get a free school meal this academic year. In Westminster, we had already committed to doing that ourselves for our kind of Westminster pupils, but with Sadiq's offer, we were able to kind of expand that and then also divert funds into other things as well. So I think my ask for him would be to give us that commitment again next year so we can do the same again in this cost of living crisis.
Because I'm right in thinking that it's funded for the first year and then essentially the budget requirement goes on to the local authority to continue to fund it for the subsequent...
I think that is the current situation, yeah. I think that Sadiq and the City Hall have not promised whether it'll be next year as well. So it'd be great if they could make that commitment.
Yeah. And I guess that's, you know, going back to what you said, James, about being sort of the building blocks of a stable home... You know, having a safe roof over your head, you know, going into school, you know, and not being hungry and, you know, being able to learn. And they're sort of fundamentals, aren't they, that, you know, at the very core of what Labour governments and Labour politicians want to do.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And then, go on, Oscar.
So, yes,
hand up. That's very formal.
Thinking back to 2022, where you historically won Westminster for the first time in 60 years, as you say, looking forward to 2026, obviously we've got the mayoral election and then the general election to come in between those dates. What would you want success to look like? If I'm a resident of Westminster and I voted for you, perhaps having not voted Labour previously in Westminster, and in the weeks leading up to the election, you're knocking on my door, what would you like to be able to say to those voters about what you've achieved, about what the future looks like for Westminster, and about how you've helped improve their borough?
Well, I think I would like to be able to go back onto the doorstep and say, here's a list of promises we made. These promises were made. These promises have been kept. You know, we very much promised evolution and not revolution in Westminster. There were some things about Westminster Council which we think work well, and we've continued it, and other things we think work much less well, and we've sought to change them. I think a good example of this and our approach more broadly is probably the Fair Economy Plan, which obviously is in the department that I'm very proud to represent. You know, it's very much a pro-business administration, but at the same time, we want to ensure that businesses create social value locally and ensure that, you know, the jobs, the wealth, the opportunities that are definitely here in Westminster are also afforded to Westminster residents who might not always have had access to those opportunities. So we've recently launched the Digital Dash programme in North Paddington, which is aimed at 18 to 25-year-olds living in some of our most deprived wards in Westminster, where it gives them an opportunity to get involved in the tech industry with some of the biggest tech companies in the world, like Visa, on board with that. So I think that's a good example of what our approach is more broadly. And we've done a lot on housing, we've done a lot on the environment, we've done a lot on inequality, at the same time as also maintaining, you know, popular bin collections and having the lowest council tax in the country. You know, you look at neighbouring Tory Kensington and Chelsea, it's £400 more a year on council tax. So we've delivered, I think, a lot of improvements in terms of social justice in Westminster since 2022. We've got a lot more to do before 2026. So I hope we're able to go back to people in 2026 and say, look, we've done a lot, but there's a lot more to do. And I hope you'll give us another 4 years to be able to do that.
I think, yeah, absolutely echo everything that James just said then. But I think the one thing I would add to that is I think I would like residents to feel as if today's council is a lot more responsive to what they say and actually listens to what they want. I think previously maybe the council was a little bit, say, paternalistic and didn't quite have that kind of back and forth relationship between what a resident's saying and kind of involving residents in decision making. And I think we have started to do that a lot more here in Westminster now. We've got a cabinet member whose her portfolio is devoted to resident engagement and consultation, and I think that just shows how much importance we're putting on kind of being responsive and listening to residents and having people participate in our decision making.
Yeah, I say I do live in Westminster, and I did have Jeff knock on my door on election night to ask if I voted. And I said, I'm a Labour member. And he said, that's not what I asked. the man was in a rush. But
Labour members can often be the most difficult people to canvass in many ways.
So just before we sort of wrap up, I think, you know, we're all, as I say, sort of recovering from conference. There are positive noises. Labour's moving in the right direction. If you could deliver one message to Keir, you know, one priority from Westminster Council to Keir when he's in number 10 in terms of policies you want to see delivered, priorities for the next Labour government, what would it be?
I think we've spoken about housing already, so I think that's a given. But I think from a potentially personal, political and professional level, I would like the next government to be a little bit more stable. I think the last 13 years, whatever your political persuasion, have been chaotic, from austerity to Brexit to COVID to the mini budget. We've had so much turbulence, and I would plea for the next Labour government or the next government, whoever they are, to do the radical things that we need to kind of improve our housing market and that kind of thing. But we need a government that's going to provide stability and certainty so we can plan our lives as individuals, but also, you know, as business as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, Keir has his five missions. The government, the Labour Party has its five missions for government, and I think stability underpins all of them. You know, without stability, you can't have private sector investment. Businesses can't plan for the future. You can't have the economic growth which our country so desperately needs. So I think stability feeds into economic growth, and without that economic growth, we're not going to have the investment in the health service we need. We're not going to have the investment in education we need. We're not going to have the revolution of our public services, which, you know, are crumbling at the moment. So I think stability added to economic growth is what we need and what will underpin the success of a future Labour administration if we're lucky enough to get one.
And finally, highlights from conference. You know, I think there are a lot of things for people who've never been to a political party conference before. You know, it's sort of like a geeks festival, right? It's like Glastonbury for nerds. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on, a lot of events, a lot of fringes, a lot of karaoke. I would say a disproportionate amount of karaoke.
Yeah.
And some not so good singing as well.
And what I would say is a really, really low standard of singing. Because, you know, karaoke doesn't always attract the best and brightest, but it's surprising how bad Labour politicians are at singing. So what for you guys was the highlight slash low light of conference?
Well, I think the highlight has to be seeing lots of friends who I've known for quite a while, you know, who are keen to build a better Britain, really. I think in many ways it's a noble thing to get involved in politics. I think to see people run for office, people support it, people in office, people who are working for the party, you know. A lot of people could be doing other things which might be less stressful, which might pay them more money, but I think that desire to see a better country and to believe in something and to work for that is fantastic to see. And I get really reinvigorated when I see, you know, people rushing around and delivering speeches and organising events and, you know, fixing something that's just fallen down and kind of the and all the kind of small things which go into something much larger, really, like, which is, you know, delivering on housing and delivering a more equal country. So that is always a highlight. Another kind of less serious highlight was Dawn Butler's Jamaica party. It's always a
Is it good?
It's always a good one, and this year it was very good indeed.
Yeah.
As someone of a Caribbean heritage myself, it's always good to hear a bit of soca music on a Labour Party conference.
Yeah, Dawn can throw a good party.
She definitely can.
Yeah. What about you, Ellie?
And I think for me, I mean, on a serious note, it was a privilege to be in the main conference hall to hear Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer's main conference speech. It was really, you know, amazing atmosphere in both of them. But yeah, probably to echo maybe what James said, I think candidly the best part of conferences is always being able to meet up with people, old friends and new, and just kind of let your hair down a little bit in the evenings as one big happy Labour Party family. And I think to be able to do that this year with such an electric, positive and united atmosphere was incredible.
Absolutely. Oscar?
I was slightly worried you were going to ask them to start singing at that point when you mentioned
That's on page two.
The next question.
Yeah.
I think the moment when Chris Mason from BBC asked Keir yesterday, are you a Yimby? And he, without hesitation, said, yes, I am. And I think that moment, as you said, James, I don't think that Luke wrote Keir's speech, but yeah, to be convinced that he didn't. But that, for me, was the highest point for me, the highlight.
Mine was Lisa and Andy and John Ashworth singing Journey. It's just imprinted on my brain forever.
Don't stop believing.
Absolutely. Ellie, James, thank you so much for joining us today. I know you've got a lot to catch up on after a few days up in Liverpool, not least sleep, but it's been fantastic to have you on. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much. And I think it's safe to say that if the country can turn around 18 months in the same way as Westminster has, then we're in good hands. Best of luck to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's it from us. Thanks for listening to another episode of Better Places. Don't forget to like and subscribe from wherever you get your podcasts from for all the latest episodes. Thanks for listening. Speak to you soon. Bye 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 bye.